Taking you to faraway places and bringing them home to you. Cha-cha-cha. It's the Tiki Cha-Cha Club, KBOO's all-vinyl guilty pleasure. Monday nights, midnight to 1 a.m. on 90.7 FM stereo and around the world at KBOO.FM.
I'm a-loving the old lion, a winner without fail.
KBOO Community Radio is a proud co-sponsor of the PDX Leo Party, Friday, July 31st, starting at 8 p.m. at Kelly's Olympian. A birthday celebration for all you Portland Leos with special performances from Sleep of Old Dominion and the Chicharrones, Mike Crenshaw, Smoke M2D6, and many more. Again, that's the PDX Leo Party on Friday, July 31st, starting at 8 p.m. at Kelly's Olympian, located at 426 Southwest Washington Street in Portland. More information can be found at kboo.fm on the right side of the homepage under Community Events.
You're listening to KBOO Portland. Hi, I'm Camille Perry, and this is Talking Earth. I'm here for my very first broadcast with the program. With me, I have a wonderful trans poet showcase. I have Amy Anza, Emily Newberry, Dylan Dills, and Amanda Jane Spencer. They're here to share their words with you and some of their experiences. I'm going to start off the broadcast this evening with Emily Newberry. Emily, would you like to tell us a little bit about yourself?
I would, Camille. I was born in 1944. It was a little rough to come out as a trans woman in those days. So I did a lot of hiding. I spoke out in the 1960s, did a lot of wrote a lot of songs in street theater. Finally came out in to myself in 2005. I've got two books of poetry published by One Spirit Press locally here. One of them's called Butterfly Arose, A Journey Through Transition. Been published in a variety of online journals, and last year one of my poems got nominated for a Pushcart Prize, which is a really big honor. And I collaborated with artist Xu Ju Wang on a limited edition artist book called Water, which is in library collections around the United States. And people can find me at butterflyarose.com. Wonderful. So I'd like to start off with one poem. It's called A Transsexual Dream. I believe in stretching to paint the moon with stardust, never fearing a fall to earth. I believe in a world where poetry flows through the pen that writes me out of other people's nightmares. I believe in a world that remains centered in love, transforming bodies where dreams fly over brick walls and gatekeepers smile.
That was beautiful, Emily. Thank you so much. Next up, we're going to hear from Amy Anza.
Hi, I'm Amy Anza. I live here in Portland with my wonderful wife, Bethy. I am a very proud step-mum of our two kiddos. And we've got a new one on the way that's due at the end of January. Yay. So I'm super excited. I've been doing poetry for, the last 4 or 5 months, so I'm a relatively newbie, but I really enjoy it as a outlet, and I like to write poetry about things that happen in my life. I'm also a geography major at PSU, and I hope to find something in that field. So my first poem that I'm going to read is called On Being Trans. Why can't they let me be? Why can't they see who I am? Every day is a battle that I feel like I will never win. But I must fight this endless war, if only to not let them win. I would rather die than live a lie, as that lie is a life not worth living. I often think about how it is a shame that those who once knew me never really knew me at all. The more I grow, the more I look back at before, and I see someone who I never knew either.
Very beautiful writings about experiences.
Thank you.
I'm sure that we are going to hear more of that from Miss Amanda Jean Spencer.
Hello, my name is Amanda Spencer. I don't like the way my voice sounds sometimes when I hear it, like, through a mic.
It happens.
It's really weird. So I moved to Portland about 5.5 years ago. I am a trans woman. I originally came from Minneapolis. And up until that point in my life, I didn't do anything with poetry. You know, I'd written a couple of poems in high school, and I was just like, this is annoying. And it wasn't until later on, when I actually moved to Portland and I had heard a few poets, few more like national spoken word poets, I was like, oh, this is cool. I can just do this, right? And then, so that was kind of my new thing I was going to do when I moved to Portland, was to try to write poetry, spoken word. And I found it really great because up until that point, I was really struggling to find an art form that really felt comfortable. And one of the things I've always loved to do is to talk. And so it was a really great way for me to be able to use my voice to really kind of as an outlet for a lot of creativity and then my own experience. So this first poem I'm going to do is actually a poem about my mom. And I should say that, like, I love my mom. Me and my mom have a very complicated relationship, but it's really good. And I've seen a lot of poets write, like, poems that are all bad. They're like, I hate my mom. Or they're like, my mom is the best person. And which kind of made me think, well, you know, like, whose mom is really like either of those extremes? Right. So this poem is kind of about that, kind of my journey with my mom. My mother went to college, got married, and had children, although not quite in that order. As a young woman with plans for college, as a single mother with my older sister who was still just a baby, she left her home, her family, and a man not fit for anyone to want to call father, from small town southern Minnesota to Minneapolis, to live in a studio apartment, taking the bus to drop my sister off at daycare, then off to a job as a receptionist, then off to school day after day for more than 4 years. But still, she never let anyone count her brave or say that she must have held this abundance of courage in her heart. She'll only say that there's never a point in looking back. It doesn't matter what mistakes you've made to get where you are. What matters is what you're going to do now that you're here and where you're going. Because she's always looking forward. The same way that she looks at me. She says that she feels a loss. That I am not the same child she raised. The only way for her to start loving me as her daughter is for me to be this new person in her life. And I know that she's only trying to avoid hurting me, trying to show how she still loves me, how she says that this will all get easier in the future. But I don't want to lose our past. I want to show her that who I am today is that same kid I was growing up, and I know I can't go back in time, but that doesn't stop me from wishing I could repaint hope over that fear I had as a child, to show the world the girl that I was, or at least just my parents, because maybe my mother could have started moving forward back then. But what ifs and maybes won't rebuild the past, so instead, I'm going to be the wind and blow clear some of that fog in her memory so she can see the girl that I always was, that I was always her daughter. I was just too scared to say anything before. But in the meantime, I'm going to keep moving forward with her. Because as much as our past means to me, our future together is far more important, and I can't stop looking forward. Because after all, I'm a mother's daughter.
Lovely. All right, last but not least, we have Dylan Dills.
Thanks, Camille. My name is Dylan. I am born and raised in Portland, a rare unicorn indeed.
Ooh, wow.
And I like to identify as a feminasty, gender queer, disabled person. You can mostly see me watching Netflix or hanging out with my beautiful cat Wasabi, or my partner, or disabling the patriarchy. Just take your pick. I've been doing poetry now, I want to say, for about 6 or 7 years around open mics around town. I've done various events for various folks. And slowly but surely, it's been an idea of mine, as well as a hopeful cultivation of consolidating all my writings and drawings and things that I've done art-wise, and making a giant zine for 2016. It's the hope. So I'm going to read a poem that is about mental illness, and I hope you, all you listeners, as well as the folks in here, enjoy. I want to let you know that you are doing better than you think you are. I want to let you know that when you first wake up in the morning, it's okay that your legs have become cinder blocks overnight, designating themselves into barracks to make sure every part of your mattress is covered to defend yourself from emotions, daily routines, and any other intruders coming in. That even if you thought about moving, the fear that rots inside of your stomach lining in the rib cages caked itself on overnight and is too big of the weight of life. Your apathy has become as white as the stains on your sweatshirt from the days of not showering or feeling, thus thrusting the belief that others find you incompetent. It's okay. You really are doing your best. For even if you can sneak past the barracks and chemically enhanced sadness of time and reach for the clothes that have been washed, you are doing all right for yourself, for you have done the impossible. Despite brain receptors that like to prove otherwise and those old systems that you were rewarded for, certain tasks need to be implemented today. Tasks that were to commiserate versus expected. Tasks that were act to prove that your worth is doing the things that you are. Despite that mistied shoes and hair only half brushed, despite trauma that has become a part of your back of your hand, despite stress that turned you so quick to rip out your own esophagus, placed itself on the back of the toilet, understanding it could no longer be inside of you, for the hot liquid bubbling around its body became too much to handle. Despite oppression, despite abuse, despite a family timeline of bitterness and fatigue, you were still growing. Hell, you still are. And let me reward you for surviving that moment. You got on pants today. Therefore, you deserve a gold star. You ate something besides your feelings. Therefore, you deserve a gold star. You woke up after 8 hours of sleep and didn't regret it. Gold star. This system is designated to honor our shoulder blades made of rustic wood, hearts built of metamorphic rock, and due to its volcanic origin, we feel things hard and we feel things fast, and it is cut by this world of smiling knives, shredded down by our limbs and fingers to sheer fabric to honor living on this planet, filled with enough war and gases that lighting a cigarette can prove lethal. To recognize that I was told a long time ago that I would never be loved. Understand the worth of my existence. We all deserve a gold star. You are doing the best you can, and that is good enough. Your story is not to be compared by others. That someone saying you cannot be sad because someone has it worse is like saying someone can't be happy because someone has it better. Recognizing the bullshit outside of these outside voices deserves a gold star, and not knowing where to find the source of this calamity means you live within a place of brilliance and madness, which light is reflected on holding the fuck on. We are both forever falling sideways, so old systems of rewards may not help us. Stay gripped in knowing that self-identified madness can prove that we are goddamn gold. Because we recognize the pain that we cause stays like you, like an irreversible bullet, disrupting kinetic energies and causing deformation of the spirit. We recognize that being real enough to show our sickness, that we see the stamp of, hello, my name is mental and I am not easy. We allow ourselves to be the reward of not killing ourselves of someone else. opening our ears to the robin's sweet coo, smelling the fresh rain by finally going outside, tasting forgiveness by checking in on our own tears, and finally feeling forgiveness by a lover or a comrade's touch, knowing the meaning of survivor and solidarity, for you and I are alive. And I want to let you know that you are doing better than you think you are.
There's a lot to be found for everyone in that piece. That was incredible. Thank you. I know you all have done a lot of live public performance. Just out of curiosity, how do you think that measures up to being here in the studio? Is this the first time for all of you on the radio? Yeah? No?
No, I've been on the radio before, but I have to say, I love the company here today, and there's nothing compares to a live audience when you connect with them.
That's true. Does anyone else have something to share on that subject?
I've spent a lot of time, like most of my poetry has been in front of live audiences and has been in front of quite a few crowds. And so for me, like, it's so much, I think I'm the opposite of a lot of people. It's so much easier for me to, like, feel relaxed and at ease when I'm in front of, like, 50 plus people. And so a small intimate group, like, because we only have the people here in the studio who are reading, it's just like, oh, God. But it has been, you know, it's great people to have here, though. I'm so glad.
You know, I think this is actually quite different than reading in front of people. I think this is easier. You can kind of sort of think about the people listening at home, but they're not looking at you, you know? Maybe they're looking at the radio, pretending they're looking at you.
Right.
Also, I would like to thank the inventors of Prozac. You've been very good to me. That's why I'm able to be here.
Well, I mean, for all the audience knows, we could all be in our pajamas right now.
Oh, I am.
Wow, you wear some fancy pajamas.
Very.
Yeah. Right. So on that note, we're going to move back through all of the poets again. Emily has a couple of pieces that tie together that she would like to share with us. So I'll hand the mic over to her.
Yes, these are not really recent, but not emotionally, they're not that distant either. The first one is about the murder of Trayvon Martin. It's called Stand Your Ground. There is a 9mm gun that cracked the door open to no tomorrow. There is a story of two young men with only one voice left standing. There is blood on the ground and tears flowing from the heavens. There is a state that loses justice, raises safety on a pedestal, and gets death in the mail. There is a community that puts its frustration at past crimes into the holster of a man. There's a teenager eating Skittles, and the news says that too much sugar can kill you. There is a trial, and the rule of law rules that 9mm of assumptions and 300 years of black history are not admissible as evidence. The other one is titled Ferguson. The street is bored red, even if the cameras are shocked to see another misdemeanor drying in the afternoon sun. An hour ago, skateboards scratched out hip-hop songs on sidewalk stays with short notes and no rests, only repeats. The day didn't mean to make trouble, but it couldn't help asking if what came yesterday could please politely disappear. Still, it will make for riveting reality TV when the anger of the stopped and searched searches for a good place to strike. One match, and the cold steel of the lawfully blind rules will burn around police vans and convenience stores. The cameras roll. Take one, the rioters say, and the body lays out behind yellow tape, dreaming.
Lovely. It's really wonderful to have poetry as a means of dealing with these massive public events. It's we have a very heightened political atmosphere today, and I think that words such as those are very important. Thank you for sharing those. We're going to move on to Amy again.
Yay. So I'd mentioned earlier on in the program that me and my wonderful wife, Bethy, are expecting. I wrote a poem about them. We just recently went and got the first ultrasound at 12 weeks. And even though it was a kind of a blurry blob, it was the most beautiful blurry blob that I've ever seen. And so, yeah, I felt compelled to write a poem, and I hope that I can share this with them one day, because I already love them. So their name is Tabor. Tabor, although you're not even born yet, there's already so much love that I feel for you. Thinking about you makes me feel so happy, and I cannot wait to share that happiness with you. You truly will be, and already are, the best of me, and the person who I love the most, with only the love that I feel for you being equal. When we are finally graced with your presence, our lives will be forever changed for the better because of you. I promise to always care for you and to nurture you, to help you grow and thrive, and help you become who you want to be. Times may not always be easy for you, and sometimes they may even be hard. But always know that the love I feel for you will be there, always.
Oh, lovely.
Thank you.
Goodness. Well, we're going to go back to Amanda Jean. What do you have to share with us this time?
So this is a poem that I wrote. It's very much, it was my first attempt into like sort of magic realism. And it's a very weird poem, but it's very much of meant to be a reflection on myself. And a lot of like conflict that I think, you know, for me as a relatively poor trans woman, like a lot of conflict that I have of like wanting to, like, I have my values and things I believe in, and then I also need to like be able to eat and get to point A to point B, and sometimes like I have to contribute to fucked up capitalism.
Careful with the language.
It's all right.
And so
Fudged up capitalism.
There you go. So, yeah, and so that's kind of what this poem is a reflection on. I have never eaten a crab cake, never seen a picture of one, have no desire to know what one will taste like now. Even if a giant crab cake came to life, flew its way up to me, rammed its body down to my mouth, clawed its way to my stomach, even if it was the best or worst experience I'd ever had, I wouldn't want to write a poem about it. Unless, let's say that crab cake had a birthmark. Well, fuck it. Okay, my giant flying cartoon crab cake is going to have two. And the first is a circle A with a deep red scar through the middle. See, this crab cake has ideals that it will fight for. It will screw capitalism every way that it can. And right below that is a perfect Nike swoosh. This crab cake sometimes has to sacrifice what it believes in. And on the side is sewn a purple triangle. A reminder of the struggles that others before it has faced. It will try to wear this proudly now, but it is ice cold underneath. And from the side spread two great white eagle wings, but they are broken and crumpled. This battle for so-called freedom others keep fighting for have left it grounded. And it is strapped together tight with black bondage tape, because it is bursting from the seams, because there's only fighting on the inside. And it is going bad now. But this crab cake has a martyr complex, so as a final effort, it stretches itself out tight as a springboard, and as it crumples under the weight of other crab cakes taking flight, as they fly carelessly into the mouths of hungry humans.
I like that. I was having a hard time controlling my laughter at the beginning. That's wonderful. All right, Dylan, what would you like to share with us next?
I'm going to share a poem, by the way. It's a trigger warning of rape, but I do feel that spoken word poetry has been a really wonderful outlet of me being a survivor, as well as others. Also, shout out to all my friends who are listening. I see you on Facebook, and I appreciate you listening in. Down by the strawberry fields in the east window of Ohio, she laid there with blood-soaked overalls and a desire to be anywhere than where she was. The hymns of the breeze brought that there was too much awareness of what had taken place, and tears drew crow's feet in the corners of her eyes that are still trying to find home 40 years later. Maybe this is why I take pity in her. Maybe this is why, when her words sting like razor blades too heavy and too dull to catch themselves in the sentences that somehow have led her back to safety, past the unclaimed body she still holds, how she gets sleep at night is still a question left unanswered. Five boys put themselves inside of her, and I say this delicately as if to implicate that these were all separate occasions. I say inside to at least preserve the girl that she once was down by those strawberry fields, the ironic correlation of the red berries that stained her lips that fateful day are the same that covered her hands as he rocked in her arms 16 hours later, and a fear of her own guilt paved the inspiration of a road trip that took her 2,000 miles away from her mother's sharp tongue, a suicide that not only blew his mind and the rumors that she was a town whore. So when my ribs were cracked sideways, imprints of her palm upon my shoulder, my 25-year-old body still remembers the fear of that 6-year-old heart, wishing the knowledge would serve me then as it does now. Yet it only serves for philosophical explanations of why I don't completely hate her. Mother, what is your favorite color? Mama, why do amber smooth drinks and smokable inspiration soothe you? I could deconstruct every indent on your brain left by my grandmother's switch and haunted memories trying to understand that strawberry field girl, but I only want to hold on to every word that is still left from past arguments, entangled and manipulated with a desire for a suburban household, yet blue and white are the only color of our irises, and the red that we see on a daily basis dictates the map that I have drawn with my own crow's feet, coloring in between a few good times we have left before you say goodbye. Your strawberry fields are my home in Southwest. Your hymned breeze is the sound of cupboards smashing from a lack of an outlet. Your blood-soaked overalls are my written word, covered over 500 names, 5 notebooks, and 5 years of experience emotions without chronically being infected by liquid. 40 years later, your escapism haunts me and intrigues me, because like you, I am still finding home and doing the best with what I have, despite my own strawberry fields.
Goodness. It's an amazing thing that poetry can do, drawing us together in shared difficult experiences. Thank you for sharing that. So we were going to have Sarah June Woods joining us for this broadcast, but I thought I'd give a shout out to her. She is actually off on an incredible tour and accidentally double booked herself for tonight. She couldn't very well be on air with us while she's down in Arizona. She is part of the Transplanet Tour with 5 other poets, I believe, and they are visiting Arizona, California, and they'll be back in Portland on July 24th and 25th, the 24th at the Composition Gallery and the 25th at Mother Foucault's Bookshop. So please go check out their work. They are absolutely incredible. Sarah's amazing. I'm sad that all these wonderful folks don't get to spend time with her this evening, but I think we're doing pretty well on our own. With that, I'm going to hand it back over to Emily.
I'm one of the 40% of trans people who attempt suicide when they're teenagers. And this was a poem about that. It's called Sinking. There is a lake deep enough for sinking. There is a child looking for answers. The lifeguard asks the impossible question, can you swim? The child is drowning in lies. The lifeguard asks again, can you swim? The child answers yes, thinking only of water. The child sees the end of a dock and the end of lies. The child jumps into water deeper than memory. She fell into life with no wings, but flies in her dreams. At the bottom of the lake sits the question, can you swim? The child waits for an answer. The end of a sharp pole drags her back to the nightmare.
Goodness. Can't all be rainbows and butterflies? Mm-hmm. Amy, what would you like to bring to the table for us?
Well, next up, as everybody knows, maybe not everybody, but as some people may or may not know, April was National Poetry Month, and I would assume next year it is too. And there was this thing I heard about on NPR and also through my wonderful wife, Bethy, called Zip Odes. And basically it is a poem that you write about zip codes. And so let's say your zip code is 97420, which is where I grew up in Coos Bay. So you write 9 words, 7 words, 4 words, 2 words, and then no words. And so you're kind of confined, and I thought that was pretty fun. And so I'm going to go ahead, and I've got 5 of them. They're really short, haiku sort of length. And so I'm going to kind of go in a chronological order here. Basically, from when I was probably about a year old until I was 8, I lived in Carmichael, California, which is a suburb of Sacramento. And the zip code is 95608. And here goes. 9. A bright young child full of dreams and innocence. 5. I often think of then. 6. Damn. Why did Coos Bay happen? And then nothing for 0. And then 8 is childhood changed for the worse after leaving here. So I don't think you're normally supposed to read the numbers. So from now on, I'm not going to read the numbers. Okay. But the next zip code I lived in was 97420, which is Coos Bay, Oregon. And well, you'll see what I think about it really quickly. Coos Bay, a dreadful place with its Uranus skies. Things were hard when I was younger. I still hate you. Better without. Mm. After that, I moved to Portland, and the zip code I lived in the most here in Portland, I actually do 2 Portland zip codes, is 97215, which is the Montevilla area. Excuse me. So here goes. This was the home where I grew the most. Able to take time to become me. Hard times. Thankful. I learned to love myself. Mm. Yeah, that's where I came out and turned into the wonderful genderqueer trans woman I am today. next up, I moved to Philadelphia, Pennsylvania for a while to help my friend Frazel and Chris. Shout out to them. And their wonderful, you know, people they're with, Alexis and Carrie, shout out to them too, start a company called Infinity Square Technologies, which is actually still around, but I'm not part of it anymore. And the zip code there was 19139. Philly, what a shock to my system you were then. Philly, young, reckless dreams. This place will always have a place within me. I'm also, like I mentioned, I'm also a geographer at Portland State, and place is a big theme in geography. So another reason to do the zip codes. Finally, 97220 was the zip code where I first lived with my wife, the wonderful Bethy, who I can't talk about enough. And so I will talk about that. And it kind of has to do with, we left really evicted, but we were sort of kicked out. So I kind of wrote a little bit about that. I didn't like it much when I was there. annoying roommates for which I had disdain. Right now, I miss. And in a way, I still do, but we're doing better now, fortunately. We're not houseless anymore, so.
That's good.
Yeah.
All right. Well, thank you for that. I really like that writing exercise. I think all of us decided we're now going to do that.
The constraints are brilliant.
Absolutely. I really, really enjoy that. Lots of really cool things come out of April being Poetry Month. You can find all sorts of wonderful prompts all over the internet.
Absolutely.
I'm sure that Amanda Jane has used more than one of those. What would you like to bring to the table for us?
It's a good question. Okay, so I'm going to do this poem.
Let it be said that Amanda Jane is reading all of these poems from out of her memory. She has no paper in front of her, so she seems just as surprised as we are by what comes out of her mouth. It's pretty wonderful.
Yeah, you know, that's actually kind of funny. Sometimes when I'm reading out loud, I will have that moment of changing a poem even on the fly, sometimes on purpose, sometimes on not. But I'm often a big fan of, like, just because you have something written down on a page doesn't mean that that is going to sound the best when you speak it out loud.
Absolutely.
And I will often see people, when they're reading aloud, they will stumble because they might switch a word or do a different order, and they'll think it's, like, so horrible. I'm like, and then usually it's like, actually, what you did works better for this platform of you speaking versus writing. So this next poem is actually a poem I wrote was right before my first OK Cupid date so many years ago. And this poem is about a lot of stress and anxiety, and specifically about dating cis people. If you ask me on a date, no. That it'll be the most awkward night of your life, and not just for you or me, but for every poor soul destined to bear witness as I am jamming fingers in car doors, opening bar doors in your face, tripping over my own feet to fling drinks into kissing couple faces. And yeah, this has happened more than once. But the absolute worst is when we reach inevitable first date awkward pause, and I'll mutter quietly under my breath, "This is awkward." And we say, "Excuse me?" I mean, like, "Hello, this is clearly awkward." And you'll be like, "Okay, well, you know, I gotta go. It's late, gotta be like 8, or, you know, well, I left the stove on and the cat's on the stove and the cat's in heat, and it's just a big fire hazard." But know now that all of that shit was only out of desperate fear. I have been hurt so many times in the past that I want to derail this as quickly as possible. My mind is always 10 steps ahead. A week or two from then, I'll take you to an open mic where I can read 3 poems as public disclaimers to you, because I'm afraid that you haven't quite figured out that I'm trans, or more accurately, you have, because I've mentioned it a million times before, but you haven't understand what that means to me, especially in the terms of dating and sex. And I don't want to have to tell you these things directly, so I'll do so indirectly through poetry, because that's all poetry is good for, really. But I'll still just have that slightest doubt that you haven't quite figured it out yet. And if at some point we find ourselves holding hands, we may find ourselves in your bedroom, and you'll kiss me like the river rushing to meet the ocean, and I'll make to move back like the tide receding, realizing she'd rushed in too quickly, but my heart will be racing with your hand upon my leg, and the moon will lose her sway, and I'll be stuck caught between your river and that ocean. So how will I tell you I'm still scared? When you take off my shirt to reveal my lack of curves, when you remove my bra to see my small, still developing cone breasts, when you take off my pants, will you still find my body beautiful the way that I do? What expectations will you have? What if I cannot live up to them? Will you leave and just shut me out then? Or what if I tell you how I'm feeling? Will you be hurt and insulted that I thought you would care? Or would the entire conversation just kill the moment? And I hate that I've had these thoughts, that I'm having these thoughts on our very first day, and that now we've been staring at each other in silence for over the last 5 minutes, because I don't know what to say, because all of this is too fucking creepy to say in a very first date, so frick it, I think I'm gonna go home now. So when you ask me on a date, please Don't take it personally when I just stand you up.
Oh, thank you. My goodness. That one took a lot out of you. I see it. Oh, my goodness. Thank you so much for sharing that. Dylan, we'd like to hear another piece from you, please.
Absolutely. Thank you, Camille. This piece goes out to a special mermaid in my life. I get off the bus and the night sky is casting shadows on the sidewalk, blanketing itself as if it was a drunken waltz, staggering and laughing in the dark spots, like my parents when they had too much wine after an argument. And I'm coming home to you, exhaling your breath of sleep as the night crawls to about one, and I wonder, dear one, what do you think of me? For I send you blanketed statements like these waltzing sidewalks, a must in energy and technology, uncovering the distant yells inside my head, reminding me that I am selfish, can be shameless and alone. I wonder how much my words twist inside your chest, revealing the spoken, unspoken of night terrors and predominant staples of American society, infesting every part of you to pick up and run, not leave your car for an hour, sit on the ground and weep. And when you say it's not about me, I feel a lump in my throat grow larger and the distant yells become close and up personal screams, telling me you're wrong and I am the chosen protagonist. So I launch into an all-out struggle between my words and brain, spitting forth darts on you and myself, unable to stop with the crash of the wine to the dance to the floor, seeing every shadow in clinical light and upsetting flower panels, deterring from your exact thoughts and exact actions, for I only see myself as your private dancer, and you my ballerina. Tiptoe your dance to me, and you show me the music of your body. You hold my head with grace as I try not to interrupt your movement, telling you not to give me your practice steps. To me, a private dancer who rented a video on how to give movement with art, and who doesn't know any moves, who consistently grabs their body out of desperation and to give love to you. I do not know anything more to give you, private dancer, you say, but I always know that I love you and it's not about you.
I love a good love poem. When it's done the right way, it's so beautiful. Thank you for that. So I thought I'd ask really quickly, do any of you have upcoming readings or events that you would like to share?
I'm one of the challenging poets on not the New Poet Challenge that's tomorrow, but the one in August. And I'm hoping to have all trans poets. But I feel like, you know, most trans people do write poetry, so that might be...
And have already read live and all of that.
Yeah, because that's where I started. Yeah. So I'm hoping that I can return the favor to, you know, some wonderful trans poets to be.
Wonderful.
Yeah.
The event that Amy is talking about is, of course, Curtis White Carroll and Amanda Cochran Hillstrom White's show New Poet Challenge. The fifth edition of that is happening tomorrow night at Pairings Portland Wine Shop. It starts at 6 p.m. The challenger poets, the people that are booked for the show, bring in up to three brand new poets. Maybe they've never written anything more than a haiku, and have them hop up in front of this small, intimate group of people and read new poetry. It's a really wonderful series. I've been one of the challenger poets. Tomorrow's challenging poets are J. Adam Collins, Leah Rayner, Dusty Santamaria, and S.B. Appel. So, again, that's 6 p.m. tomorrow night at Pairings Portland Wine Shop, just a little bit north of Burnside.
Yeah, they're awesome, and it's awesome, and maybe I'll see you there.
Wonderful.
Hope I do.
All right. Well, now that we've done some more gabbing, let's go back to Emily for another poem, please.
Sure. I have two sons of whom I'm just totally in love, so don't get me started. But recently, I'm 71 years old, so I had the talk with them. What happens after I die? Mostly to give them permission. I'll be cremated. It's about you, not about me. Don't worry. But then it got me to thinking that... oftentimes, we just have this really sad thought about what dying means. And I thought, you know, there's another side to it. It's not exactly happy, but it's not exactly sad either. This is called I want to die then. When the sun rays crack the space where branches herd breezes, when rabbits first turn a wary eye and nibble the first leaf, I want to die then. I want to have my last breath sing about lips inches from a kiss, babies poking through bloody legs, and poems aching to flow from pens. When the earth warms under midday sun and flowers turn to bathe in full light, when sparrows argue over worms and perching spots, I want to die then. I want my body, arms wide, to welcome a building's first brick, to shield new ideas from cynic's sneer, to welcome ant and worm to the feast of decay I become. When the owl's silent talons grab the first evening meal, when shadows play before darkness steals their stage, when endings become opening lines in nature's play, I want to die then. I want my clouding eyes to close the chapter on pain, my lips become the blue of sky, and skin the gray of wisdom.
I love that. A little bit of nature imagery for us alongside that. That's beautiful. Thank you.
Thank you.
Amy, you're up next.
Yay. I kind of believe in the bad, good, bad sandwich. so my last poem was kind of about something not so bueno, you know. Mm-hmm. Leaving a place. And my next poem is also bad, so I'm just going to say a really quick joke if I can. also, hi, Adrian. And my quick joke is I do impressions, and here's an impression of George Washington, the first president of the United States. Hi, I'm George Washington. I can do anybody from before about 1840. So I take requests, and yeah.
And okay. She has us falling out of our chairs over here.
I totally do. Yeah, I play bar mitzvahs and parties. No, I would if you want.
She'll be here all week.
I literally will. Yeah, they're gonna lock me in so I can't get out. So my next poem, my little downer poem, it's called Sabia's Dad. Picking up my daughter alone is hard, not because I dislike it, but because I'm afraid people will think that I lack legitimacy. From the kids who said that they didn't know if I was a boy or a girl, and to being referred to as Sabia's dad by the school administrators. These are the things which seem to define my life, in clear defiance of my own definition. I ache from the constant need to have to prove my motherhood to be valid, not just from other parents, but from strangers. From the looks I get from the other parents when I watch the kids at the park, to the fear that I feel when I take them into the bathroom, when I'm alone with them. I spend far too much time and energy feeling like I have to hold a constant defense around them, knowing that at any moment, someone could spout their faux news bullshit and label me as something awful, of which I'm definitely not. I do this out of love, and I do this out of defiance for both my children and my wife. But I am not Sabia's dad.
Hmm. Oh. That's one of the most difficult things, dealing with genders yeah. that people don't necessarily recognize immediately.
Well, and even more so, like, I don't make any effort to try to change my voice to right. quote-unquote pass. I just am who I am, and I think that makes it even more difficult because just hearing me, I imagine I probably don't sound super feminine, but everybody who knows me knows that I am 100%, you know, girl.
Let it be noted that Amy is wearing the cutest polka dot skirt. I don't even know.
It's also, it doubles as a top too.
Of course.
Oh, it's amazing. I love it so much. And I got it at the Bins.
I love it. Yes. Quick advertising for the Bins. I'm sure we'd all
They're
get on board.
Amazing.
All right, Amanda, would you like to bring us another piece?
Yeah, so I could do a piece to lighten the mood, but I'm not going to. So this poem, it's one of the few poems I really feel the need to do a trigger warning, like, very much. And so this poem deals a lot with death. depression and suicide. And it was some, you know, it's a poem that I wrote a few years back. And, you know, it's one of those things that, you know, I can really look back on. Even then when I wrote it, I was looking back on it, but it's, I still feel like it's really important for me. I haven't read it in a while, so we'll see how that goes. When I die, I want you to be sad about it. None of this joyous celebration of my life turning to you moving on bullshit. I expect tears for at least 3 weeks straight. Drinking is only allowed if it's the drink away your feelings, because now you feel dead on the inside, kind of drinking. Instead, remember, every time I interrupted you, every sentence I incorrectly finished, instead of rude, think honest. It's a narcissistic, strong, and independent. Confess your undying love for my now dead self, and please resist the urge to kiss me, as that would be creepy and not consensual. And I hate to admit, but I feel like that will be the only time I will ever be loved. I won't be loved again until I am dead. So when you're staring at my lifeless body, just chop off my hands. Intertwine the fingers to fold them into a butterfly to mount on your wall. Or use as a doorstop. Just not as a paperweight, it'll only make them wish they were living again. Chop off all my hair. Twist into rope to wrap my wrist behind my back, then tie into a noose to slip around my neck and let everyone know that I've spent my whole life slowly killing myself.
I've got a couple of different perspectives on death. I really appreciate getting to hear different sides of the coin. I think we have time for one more poem, and then I'll share some announcements. Dylan, would you like to carry us out?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, absolutely. And following Emily's kind of nature imagery, I have this poem here. It's called Some Days. Some days, you have to strip off all layers of your skin, allow the exposure of bones and soft meat to show, and move in a place where you can tenderly tend to those parts of yourself that you swore you had forgotten. I know that beneath alarms screaming on my cerebral cortex, behind touch that seems too intoxicating for comfort, surfaces a soul I have built myself. Children work like collisions on track and train, forcibly belittling the friction till there is too much speed to tell when it is time to slow down. My inner child is your inner fear. Asking for a place to stay and rest, to no longer be masked by uncertainty of others' actions, to no longer be afraid for when they fall asleep that they will not wake to death, but to wake to no one there to greet them. No lord laid upon my soul to keep, so between mixed drinks and appetite to continue cycles, my child breathed out smoke and inhaled insecurity, forming into a teenager bent on mass destruction, chemical imbalances, finding God in opium, lucid dreams. Lying wasn't a learned behavior, for I never knew the truth, that the love I received was actually forced care, and a willingness to change a past that was already locked and untouchable. My arms carried those burdens of my mother, found kindling in manipulation and faking sick, created a forest fire with anger, a chaotic vision of my own self-worth. And when the fire calmed itself and all you could see was the ash and remnants of suffering, I put the ash underneath my eyes, knelt, and prayed. What spawned was crow's feet that were left behind by the very bird to remind me that luck was a philosophy, pride will be the death of me, and selfishness was my omen. What conspired between rising slowly to my feet to start to clean up and to sometimes run away from the mess was an intense desire to always come back and be okay. The land became my body, the earth became my toes, the ashes became my blueprint and a design for living. And this forest became wrapped into my spine, twisting into hidden places Atlas forgot to add. And I remember I had created and cleaned the wreckage, and no one should ever discourage it. This is how my soul was built. This is how souls are christened. A passionate alignment of problems and serenity gave me peace with the animals I had harmed, and I took their teeth and now wear them proudly around my neck. For I know that regardless of the burnt marks I made upon this earth, regardless of whom, of those whom became mute and distant after I had destroyed them, regardless of how my cerebral cortex became a smoke alarm and it led me 10 steps back after 5 steps forward, vulnerability and these ashes are my comrades, and my soul was built with their smudge.
Oh, beautiful. My goodness, I feel so privileged to be in a room with all of you wonderful writers. This has been a wonderful night. I'm just going to talk about a couple more upcoming events. So tomorrow night, I mentioned the New Poet Challenge is happening at Pairings Portland Wine Shop. Also tomorrow night and every week on Tuesdays is Salon Skid Row downtown at the Corner Bar attached to the Rialto. Josh Lubin runs that event. And this week he is going to have Robert Lashley, who's traveling from Washington, Leanne Grable, and Polly Dugan. And there's an open mic that starts off that show. Doors are at 7. The show starts at 8. About 15 minutes of open mic at the start, and then you get your features. Always a really great show. I encourage people to try to catch both shows if they possibly can tomorrow night. I would also like to talk about where Patrick, our board op, was before here. He was down at Soundgrounds over on Belmont. Every Monday they have literary events, including open mic nights, different themed events. I've done some very fun things over there, reading Shakespeare and strange things like that. So I wholeheartedly encourage you to check out those events on Mondays. Let's see. I think that's it for community announcements. I would like to take this opportunity to thank everyone for being here. Emily Newberry, Amy Anza, Amanda Jane Spencer, and Dylan Dills. Amy or Emily, do either of you have a real short poem that we can finish up with? Mm-hmm. You want to? Emily will finish it out.
The beginning of life is a wonder. In living, we take a big chance. And the question we're laboring under is the music to which we will dance. And the steps that we take, our story will make, and leave on our wake the give and the take. Look back with a casual glance. But listen, dear friend, to the music. Think not of the end of the tune, and take each step as you choose it, for the ending will come rather soon. For each grateful day, be caught up in play, and guard your own way of being, and say, the truth is, I hadn't a clue.
Thank you so much, Emily. You've been listening to Talking Earth on KBOO Portland. My name is Camille Perry, and until next time, we'll send you off. Thank you.
This is KBOO Portland, listener-powered, non-corporate community radio.
KBOO Community Radio is a proud co-sponsor of the 7th. Leon Bridges, Freak Water, and dozens more. Pickathon takes place at Pendarvis Farm in Happy Valley and features weekend or single-day tickets, as well as wooded camping, food trucks, and local beverages. A full list of artists, stage schedule, ticket prices, and transportation options can be found at kboo.fm/pickathon2015. KBOO Community Radio is a proud co-sponsor of the 14th Annual Northwest String Summit, July 16th through the 19th at Horning's Hideout in North Plains, Oregon. Hosted by Colorado-based Yonder Mountain String Band, this year's festival includes bands such as Grinsky's Bluegrass, the infamous String Dusters, Keller Williams' Grateful Grass, Sook Twins, and more. There will also be a late-night stage, an early-morning Cascadia stage, and daytime movies and seminars. Again, that's the 14th Annual Northwest String